I'm Sarah Marshall. I've worked with some of the world's leading brands to drive business growth. And now I'm sharing my knowledge and expertise with you. In my podcast, Lessons from the Boardroom, I talk to other successful leaders to find out how they've perfected their craft, driven success, and dealt with the challenges that leadership sends us. So come on, dive in.
Welcome to Lessons from the Boardroom, the podcast, can't even say podcast, the podcast version. Today we've got somebody fascinating to talk to. We have Simon Newman, who is the chief exec of the Online Dating and Discovery Association. And I cannot wait to get into this with you, Simon. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good, good. Can we start by Online Dating and Discovery Association? Can you give us a bit of a story, a bit of background about your journey to being the chief exec of this fascinating job?
Yeah, so I'll just start off very briefly talking about the ODDA and what it does, and then I'll kind of talk a bit about the rather unusual journey that's taken me from where I started to where I am now. So the Online Dating and Discovery Association is a trade body, and effectively it's the voice for organisations that are involved in delivering online dating or social discovery, which effectively is where people go and meet others for friendship, communication, and so on and so on. So I've been doing the job for 3 months, and our role is to hopefully try and improve standards across the industry, as well as influencing governments and policymakers, both the UK, Europe and the US, and even further afield, to understand and recognise some of the challenges the industry have. So it's a really, really fascinating role.
Yeah, and big challenges.
Massively. Yeah, absolutely.
I have tiptoed into this world once or twice. And I hope you can sort it out, Simon. There we are. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, say no more.
So how did you get there? How did you get to be chief exec of the ODDA?
Well, it's a rather funny route. So in the last few years, probably about 8 or 9 years, I've been working in the online safety space. For me, a mixture of both supporting kind of individuals as well as businesses and other organisations around how to kind of reduce the harms or the risk from being online. And I'd done some work with the previous chief exec of the ODDA and thought, what a fascinating organisation to be involved in. She moved on to a different role and said, look, there's a job going here. And so I applied. And that's effectively how I got the job, really. But my background's kind of really unusual in the sense that I spent much of my career working in the civil service in the UK, in government and in policy roles. I've worked internationally as well, again, sort of in a similar capacity, working for a foreign government, a friendly foreign government, and also worked in cybersecurity field, again, for about the last 7 or 8 years as well. So a real mix of things. And one of the strangest things I guess I've done in my career is I've also set up an airline, which is quite unusual. So, just goes to show what a variety of different things you can do.
What? You can't just drop that in. What airline?
Well, it's not quite an airline in the traditional sense of an airline, but one of the things I was involved in was to set up the National Police Air Service. And in the UK, without boring people to death, regulation in aviation, it's either green or grey, which is military, or it's not, in which case it comes under civilian rules. And police helicopters come under civilian aviation rules. So effectively, when I built the National Police Air Service, I had to build it in exactly the same way as the likes of the EasyJets, the Ryanairs, the British Airways of this world as well. And a very interesting process, but not something that many people can put on their CV, I guess.
Oh, man. So apart from your current job.
Yes.
Which has been your favourite? Because what a fascinating career.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to say. Every job I've had, I've always enjoyed. I think there's certain aspects of them that I found really interesting and exciting. Probably the most fun I had was when I worked in the United Arab Emirates. I was employed directly there by the Minister of Interior and worked for the Minister of Interior himself, who was a really interesting individual. And I think what was exciting about that is you have a country that's just incredibly positive and also very rich. And it's so nice to have someone saying, actually, start with a blank piece of paper. What can we do? What's actually possible? What's achievable? And push the boundaries. And as someone involved in policy and innovation, it's so exciting, refreshing, rather than having someone say, oh, you can't do that, or no, that costs too much money, just to say, no, think of the impossible. What could we do to make people's lives better? And I think that's a really exciting thing to be involved in. So really fascinating.
And so unusual to be in that position. If I think of all of the leadership positions that I've been in, I can't think of a single one that wasn't restricted by budget.
Yeah, I mean, there are other restrictions, clearly, but the basic concept of we want to be the best country in the world in everything, and we've got money to do it.
Yes.
What we need is help to in order to get there. And yeah. You know, you've got a specific job around domestic security and sort of, you know, issues that are around crime and policing. You know, look at what goes on around the world. What can we learn from that? And how can we make things better for our citizens and people who come here and live as residents and tourists, which is just, you know, it's great. And I think, you know, one of the, and I'll say this jokingly, I spent quite a few years working in the Home Office, and there's a great joke that everyone in the civil service or everyone in the Home Office has a double barrel surname with the last part being no. You know, and it's a sad reflection on what I think UK can often be like, is that we are quite negative. And we don't push the boundaries as much as we could do. And that just goes to show what's really achievable. You know, it's now the safest country in the world. You know, it's got one of the fastest rates of economic growth. You know, and those things are achievable because of the attitudes of the people involved. And I think that for me is what I found so exciting.
Well, let's take this note of positivity and dig out some lessons that you've learned along your way, if that's okay.
Of course.
Can you tell me about the best lesson that you've learned?
So I think the best lesson I've learned is probably one that's been reasonably recent, and that's about making sure that you've got people around you who are able to listen, but also challenge. You know, in my previous role, there was a period of time where I was not particularly happy. And that was to do with perhaps the direction of things were going at a national level. And it was nice being able to have people and saying, look, this is my view. Challenge me. Tell me I'm wrong. And really throw that open to people whose opinions and value and thoughts I really valued. And so I always say, I think that's the best lesson I've learned, is don't be frightened to ask for help, but make sure you've got the right people around you who can really challenge you on what you're thinking and your ideas and so on. So that for me is probably the most important lesson I've learned, and one that I've learned probably more recently than others.
And how do you create a culture that within which people feel that they can challenge the big boss?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. And I think that's about how your leadership style develops. I mean, I've always been someone who's been very supportive. I like to encourage my staff to grow and to challenge. And in fact, when I first joined the civil service, my first boss said to me, and it's the one thing that's always stuck through my career, challenge everything. And I think that's such a great piece of advice to give. Now, that doesn't mean to say you've got to be argumentative and, you know, be difficult, but actually ask those questions. Why do we do it this way? Why are we doing it that way? You know, and that can really help you, I think, just see things in a slightly different way. So I think leadership is really important in terms of the way I see it is providing that platform for my staff to have the confidence to be able to challenge and innovate and not feel frightened in coming forward with ideas. That I would hate that if anyone said to me, we just don't feel the opportunity to express ourselves or express our ideas. I would be, you know, absolutely aghast in horror at that.
And is that a formal structural system, or is that more to do with how people feel?
I don't think it's formal at all. And I hate formality to some extent. I think you've got to create an environment where it is very flexible. Everyone works differently, and you've got to build on their strengths and hopefully allow them to be creative and innovative in whatever way they find best. And I think that for me is the real strength of good leadership, is you're not providing a one size fits all solution. You've got to do things in a certain way, and ideas can only come this way and in this particular format. It stifles that innovation and thought. So it is, I think, being really flexible and, you know, trying new things sometimes and taking people on that journey.
And do you find that different sectors have naturally have different cultures? So something like cybersecurity, for me, that feels quite tight.
Yeah.
Whereas, and I've got no empirical, I've got nothing to base this on. Cybersecurity feels quite tight, whereas online dating and discovery feels a bit looser for some reason to me. Is that?
Oh, it's a whole new world. Yeah, I've learned new things and new ways of working, which actually is I really love. It's challenging your kind of ways of working and your whole approach. But you're right, every sector is different, and I think the cultural part's so important. And I often, you know, go into businesses, perhaps in previous roles, and you see that same sort of structure. And, you know, I'm going to be controversial and say that I think that's often a weakness of management, is that we expect our people to work and behave in a certain way. And that, for me, stifles innovation. So, you know, I think we can learn from lots of different sectors. There's lots of really great things. And the creative industry is a great example of creating environments that actually really encourage innovation and different ways of working. And it'd be nice to kind of use some of those lessons and apply them in workplaces, as you describe, as being a little stricter and a bit more rigid.
Yeah, I can feel that. If I think about places that I've worked, like, I don't know, BT or Barclays.
Yeah.
They're brilliant on one hand in that they've got their shiz all together, right? They've got the systems and processes and ways of working that do smooth things. But equally, there is a certain way of doing things. And that's how, you know, and I know for like organizations like Coke or Disney or Universal, where I've worked as well, it tends to be a bit more, this is how we do things, rather than, okay, well, let's just explore.
Yeah, and it's interesting. One of the things, I'm quite reflective as a person, and I often think, you know, part of me would love to be the type of person who could just follow rules. Yeah. You know, I'd probably have a lot less stress in my life if I was just so, oh yeah, that looks great, I can fit to the culture, but I'm not. And I think, you know, I look at some of those things and I look at some of those behaviors sometimes, and I think you just don't see happy staff. And for me, you know, if you've got staff who are engaged and motivated, they're more productive. And that's where you get real growth. And you know, looking at a government level, one of the things that I think is a really great idea, we monitor the success of a country quite often on its economic performance. There are a handful of countries around the world who measure happiness. How happy are their citizens? And I think that's such a rewarding and encouraging way of looking at you know, what works. So, you know, yeah. I think shifting the narrative from how we used to work, and we haven't really changed much in 100 years. The pandemic kind of forced us to work in a slightly different way. You know, we're starting to go back into the old ways, into embracing something for the future. And I think that's a much more exciting and different approach, which, you know, hopefully will work well.
Mm, I agree. OK, tell me about the hardest lesson that you've ever learned.
Failure.
I can't believe that.
No, but it's really interesting, I think. I think one of the things I've learned, you know, it is that thing about failure. No one goes in expecting to fail. And I know you read lots of stuff and you hear lots of people say, oh, you know, to be successful, you've got to fail a couple of times. But it's a really alien thing to think about until you've actually been through it. And you know, I look back again at a particular period of time where I was running, again, a small cyber division of a company. And the idea was actually to do policing. We were looking at trying to create an assurance scheme for businesses to show that they've got a very low level of cybersecurity things in place. So below the government standard, but for micro businesses. And it just didn't take off at all. And I couldn't understand why. And I think on reflection, you know, there was loads of effort going into it, but perhaps I didn't really understand the market enough. I hadn't done enough market research, you know, and so that's quite hard when you fail, because you're really passionate about it. It's your idea. It's your baby. But for whatever reason, it doesn't work. So that's the hard lesson.
What did you do with that lesson?
Well, I think that's the next thing, isn't it? It's important, you know, failure is okay, provided you can learn from it and understand the reasons why that failed. And that was a real eye-opener for just helping me understand the importance of things like proper research, you know, piloting things, testing things. And whilst you're often keen to fly into these things at 100 mile an hour and get off the ground really quickly, sometimes taking a bit of time to do those things up front can save an awful lot of grief later on. So, you know, lessons, I think, from failure are really, really important.
I often talk to my clients about sanding their skirting boards. And it's, you know, that boring bit of decorating. And you just want to throw the paint on the walls, don't you? You just want to get the paint on the walls. But if you don't do a bit of sanding, then it looks crap.
Well,
And it's the same in business. If you don't do your insight and your due diligence, and if you don't base your activities on customer understanding, then your walls are going to look shit.
Yeah, although to be fair, my wife will joke about this. I'm really dull, but I love the preparation side. There's nothing for me that's more exciting than sanding down walls, filling in holes, and preparing stuff. You know, my wife was like, I can't be bothered with this. I just want to put the last coat of paint on and that's it. And I'm like, oh, no, we've got to get the walls nice and smooth, you know, and so on. So, you know, I think that preparation side is really important. And wearing another hat, I also train civil servants. And one of the things I often say to them is that the more time you spend at the beginning part of a process, particularly in developing policy, the better the quality of the outputs. So people have this tendency to jump straight into solutions. You know, I've got a problem. Right, let me find a way of dealing with it without really understanding the nature of that problem they're trying to solve. So, yeah, I'm kind of learning all the time. But for me, failure is the hardest thing. And I think, you know, it's important not to be frightened of failure, but go into it knowing that you're going to fail at some point, but then you learn from it.
Yeah, I completely agree. What is the single piece of advice that you would give to somebody else in your position?
So there's a couple of things really I'd say. So the first one is about networking. And I think that's really important because sometimes as a leader, I think you can feel on your own. You know, you've not necessarily got people around you immediately who can tell you whether they're doing something right or something wrong. And equally, there will be people who've been through exactly the same that you're currently going through. So just asking them, you know, what happened when you faced this situation? How did you deal with that? What words of advice you can give? So for me, that importance of building that network is really useful. And equally, the network with people outside the day job, because you need someone just to sort of sound off and kind of let go some of the stresses sometimes. The second piece of advice I often give, and it's a really strange one, is about saying yes to everything. It's a philosophy that I followed through my career in that, and it's been incredibly rewarding, albeit I am overworked, I accept that. But, you know, there are great opportunities that will come your way. And I think it's always interesting and fascinating to say yes, because that develops my own learning. I pick up new things and I can apply them in different areas. So I think, again, we have a habit of being Brits. We quite often just focus on one thing at a time and we trudge through the week and it's, oh, look, it's another weekend and so on. Whereas actually sometimes saying, you know what, I really want to try something different. Let me get involved. Maybe it's volunteering or maybe it's get involved and do a bit of public speaking or something. And it just opens your eyes to so many different things. So I think say yes is another really important aspect for me.
I love that. Interestingly, when my mum died 18 years ago now, she was the front of the family. My dad was very, well, not quite antisocial, but you know what I mean. And somebody said to him at the time, for a year, Jeff, say yes to everything. Because if you say no, people will stop asking you eventually. And fair play to the man. That's what he did for a year. He said yes. And brilliant. He would whinge. It's a typical Yorkshireman. He'd whinge and moan and, oh, I don't want to go there and I don't want to do this. But he did it. And I think that probably enriched his life.
Yeah.
And made sure that he had the network and the support. Now, that's not a business analogy, but I completely agree with you in terms of having a positive, proactive stance rather than a position of, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, and a good example. So this week on Tuesday, I chaired the DigiGov conference at the XL. You know, so two of my guests on that are the Secretary of State for Science and a minister in the House of Lords. So again, that's great from raising your profile, but it's also brilliant for being able to connect with real influencers and leaders. And that knowledge and experience you can take into the day job. So for me, by saying yes to volunteering to chair a conference for no fee, you know, okay, actually has benefits in other ways as well. And I think that's why I always say yes to things, because you never know quite how useful that's going to be at some point for your own career and leadership.
And enriching.
Absolutely. Yes, great fun, if not a little tiring.
On that one. Yeah, but if you say yes, you are going to be knackered, Simon. I mean, let's, you know.
I know.
Okay, well, that has been absolutely brilliant. I could genuinely sit and talk to you all day.
Likewise,
but,
thank you.
But you've got dating apps to fix for me, mainly. We will love you and leave you. Thank you, Simon. You've been amazing.
Thank you very much.